headphone socket.
I like it. Headphone socket. That tells me a lot. A lot of matter.
It's the only socket. Simon, so yeah, we've lost. It's not the data projectors we've lost.
Okay, we should start sound set properly. I think at the moment, let's just see if we can. Yeah, okay,
we've lost the. Yeah, we're sound okay, but we've lost presentation.
Thank you.
I think we'll just have to go without, won't we?
Yeah.
Do you want to do something while we're trying to work it out, or just carry on?
Just you, us look at the slides.
I'll have to look at the slides because they're my notes.
Yeah,
like yours. we will. I think Helen, if you just welcome people, and just say unfortunately there are technical difficulties, but we're just going to plow on. All right.
So you don't want to buy you any time.
Well, the thing is, we finish at what time?
One is lunch.
We're supposed to finish a bit before. So we can't buy too much time. So I think we should. I think I can just get on with the introductions.
Yeah.
what John Day just missed out. Morning, everyone. Oh, gosh, that's loud. And a really big welcome to this Pioneers Seminar today, from whatever background you've come from. So my name's Helen. I would self-identify as a pioneer, although at the moment I'm pioneering in an established church. So that's 50% of why we're here, isn't it? Looking for new pastures and transitioning the old ones to something new as well. So in our context at Altrincham, we're doing missional communities. So we're looking at how can the church, in groups of people with groups of shared visions, really reach out to the community in which they find themselves. So we see all kinds. We've got an au pairs missional community. That gives you an idea of the kind of socio-economic group we live in. We've got geographical communities and all kinds of great stuff that's going on. So Andy asked me to host this because Roy's become a good friend of mine and is a big cheerleader of mine and keeps going, go on Helen, keep going. I know it's hard, but keep going. So Roy is now, as you might have heard, pioneer coordinator for the North. And Simon, wherever he's gone, oh, there he is pioneer coordinator for the South. So together they are two halves of the same whole, although Simon is a bit taller than Roy, as you'll see when they stand together. So they're going to share their wisdom with you. What does it look like in an established church to really push forward in mission? And what does it look like if you want to call, if you are called by God somewhere totally new, like Carolyn, who I met last night, who's pioneering mission in strip clubs and nightclubs with DJs. That sounds pretty new and exciting, doesn't it? All kinds of stuff. So hopefully, she's not from Altrincham, Roy. No, it's a little bit different, though, isn't it? She's from near Wimbledon. So hopefully, they'll be able to share their wisdom with you today, take questions, pray with you, and just help what it is God has put in you be birthed or take one step further on in that. So shall we give a big welcome to Roy and Simon? And apologise profusely for technological failure, but I'm sure they'll both be brilliant anyway.
You can't pioneer without a PowerPoint. It's devastating. Oh, yes, you can. Of course you can. Simon and I have spent weeks and months in preparation on our PowerPoint presentation for this morning, and it's all kind of sadly gone wrong. So we wanted to show you lots of images and interact with some of the film clips, and I do apologise that ain't going to happen, but we're together, we're exploring together, and you'll just have to listen to us, I'm afraid, and interact with one another. I want to, first of all, just set something of the context in which we're looking at pioneering, fresh expressions, and generally missional leadership. I'm a simple Geordie lad, I was born on Tyneside, I come from an unchurched background, and my understanding of the Christian faith is simple and hopefully profound. Can be summed up in the two greats. The great commandment is to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. And the other great is found at the end of Matthew's gospel, which is the Great Commission, to go into all the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them everything that Jesus taught, and also with his wonderful promise to be with us. That's the context in which we're looking at pioneering and other missional endeavors. Love God, love the world. Jesus came into the world. We've celebrated it through Advent and Christmas and now Epiphany. He came to seek and to save the lost. If I had more time to share in the conversation about one of my concerns is that we, in a consumer society, we can lapse into delusion and deceiving ourselves into simply what is known in North Northumberland, where I lived for a long time, sheep stealing or sheep rustling. We move people around instead of being fishers of men and women and seeing the lost won for Christ. That's the missional imperative. I love the phrase, I'm not quite sure who said it, but it's been batted around now for some 20 years. It's not that the church of God has a mission, but that the missional God has a church. That's a wholly different paradigm on which we operate. If we think of mission as in some churches, as kind of point five on the agenda at a church meeting, then mission simply becomes another activity, another piece in the program of what we run and do as church. Mission is at the heart of who God is. And the missional God calls us his people as he called Abraham, through Abraham he was going to bless the nations, and through his people God is wanting to bless and reach out to the world. Different paradigm upon which we operate. We need to take a rain check. My favorite definition of leadership is by the writer Max Dupré. He said, the first task of leadership is to define reality. And the reality is, and it seems strange to say that in a context here of fresh dreams, where there's life and growth and health, the church in the West is declining. The Baptist Union, as is all denominations, including some of the new church movements, are actually declining. That's the reality. Thank God for those exceptions, but let's not be blinded to the reality of the major decline of the church in the West. We face a crisis, but by God's grace, that crisis can become an opportunity both to seek him, which is about loving him, and also to rediscover, as God always takes his church through periods of exile, what it is that we've lost and what it is that we need to reimagine to live out the good news of the gospel in a very, very changing world situation. John Cotter, the change management guru, said, the first task is to actually create the sense of urgency. And there is a sense of urgency. Whenever I come to Swanwick, it's not that I don't like the beds or the food, but I have companions of our community who live just 6 miles from here on a farm. And being INFP in Myers-Briggs terms, after a day full of people, I just love the 6 miles drive to their farm and the cup of tea and chat for 20 minutes, half an hour, and then space. It's wonderful. When I travelled in this morning, which was a lot busier than as I travelled home late last night, I passed literally several thousand people. That several thousand people, I would suggest, have no awareness of the kind of things that we've been talking about, sharing about, singing about, and worshipping about. Over 95% of the population of Britain are outside of the Christian faith. That's the reality with which we're faced. And the sense of urgency that we need to grasp as God's people, his disciples, is a really, really serious one. Cotter says, the first and most vital step for change is to create the sense of urgency. Help others see the need for change and the importance of acting immediately. It's a great picture here. I just pause and reflect on it for a moment. No. I was an outward bound instructor. I came to faith in the Cairngorms of Scotland. Give me an ordnance survey map and I can find my way around mountains and valleys. And I lived in for 27 years in the Cheviot Hills of Northumberland until recently moved to North Yorkshire. But give me an ordnance survey map. I'm at home. I'm comfortable. I'm familiar. I know the signs. I know the contours. I know where I'm going. A number of years ago now, I went sailing, and I love going sailing. But you have a thing called a maritime chart. And the maritime chart is very different from an ordnance survey map. Its colours are different, its signs and symbols are different, and you're on a very, very different landscape, seascape. As we enter into an emerging post-Christendom culture, we are called to live out and share the good news of Jesus in a very unfamiliar landscape. In a landscape where people in the main will not come to our churches. In a landscape where attractional Christianity will relate to, at best, about 10% of the population. We operate in a context where the memory of the Christian story is removed. I'm meeting, because we formed a missional leadership network in Northumberland on Thursday night this week. In Northumberland, that once cradle of Christianity, my wife and I, without any exaggeration, and I'm 60 last year, were among the youngest people in any church in North Northumberland. No children. No young people, with the exception of Annick and a small gathering of people in Berwick. And not only are they missing from the church, we are now three generations removed from people who have any awareness of faith. Now, when I trained at a missionary Bible college, that's a missionary context. That's the context in which we find ourselves today. And we need to wake up to that reality and not assume that people understand. The story that we worshipped and sang and reflected and rejoiced over this morning, it's a story and a narrative that the vast majority of people in Britain have no knowledge or awareness whatsoever. And doing the same thing the same way, I mean, there's a lunacy about some aspects of Baptist spirituality. We have within us the idea, if something's not working, then just work harder and it might. It's the theology of the lunatic asylum. It wearies people, it wears people out, it fatigues them, and it debilitates them. And of course, it feeds into where are the next generation of leaders. They don't want to be doing that stuff that we have worked so hard with all our effort and produced so little fruit for. Doing the same thing just won't work. One of the geniuses of Rowan Williams, and I believe church history will record him as a gift to the church, is that he saw the missional imperative and challenge that was facing us. And he gave permission as the Archbishop of Canterbury to both think and do missional things, to embrace pioneering, to endorse fresh expressions, and to realize that actually simply by doing the same thing and everybody doing the same thing, you know, all we need to do is just preach the gospel. Well, we do need to preach the gospel, but how do you preach the gospel? And don't tell me there's one way to preach the gospel, because if you read the New Testament, there are all kinds of ways of preaching the gospel. And for Paul among the Jews, he went to the synagogue and he opened up the scriptures to a people who had a religious background and they understood. That's the model that we've done Christianity. We need to embrace Paul's method among the Gentiles so we can debate and discuss and be more comfortable outside in the debating chambers, the coffee shops, in people's homes, beyond the walls of the church. But it's new territory. It's new territory. We can't keep doing the same thing. Otherwise, we'll end up like Woolworths and Kodak, who had great products but refused to move and to innovate. Alan Hirsch was quoted this morning by Mark. I close with this. Jesus unleashed something totally new in human history, a missionary movement that had the whole world in its sights. Followers of Jesus should be naturally missional. If you love God, it's not about engaging in a program. If you love God, people should catch the overflow of the love of God. That's what it means to be missional. That's why we cannot separate love of God from love of the world. If we haven't got love of God, then it'll just be like drumming up some program or initiative or strategy that tries to get people by obligation or duty to go out and do the stuff. If you love God, people catch the overspill. And pioneering and missional endeavor must always be rooted in those things. Our task this morning is to remind ourselves that of the, you know, the text that whosoever, and we need to have in our minds the whosoevers of this world. My Bible college principal, who was a remarkable man and a godly man, and I thank God for those who mentored me in the early days of faith, when he preached about the lost, a tear would stream down his face. Not for effect, but because he was moved with compassion, because he saw people like sheep without a shepherd. He reminded us that he was commissioning us to go into all the world. And we went to Missionary Bible College thinking that we might have, I kind of quite fancied Brazil, because I played a lot of football and I thought that would be quite a good place to be and possibly a chaplain, but you know, sometimes God's plans and yours don't coincide. But actually I'm glad I went to a Missionary Bible College because I'm in a missionary context now here in Britain. In Acts 1, verse 8, the Spirit comes upon us to be witnesses in Jerusalem. And we do that quite well, don't we? In Judea, the neighboring fringe, yeah, that's okay. We can reach out to those. To the Samarias, well, thank God for some of the areas of no-go. Not least what Ruth was sharing this morning about issues of mental health. No-go areas for most churches. Most people, when they get depression or anxiety, or have any of the kind of mental health issues, they usually leave church, don't come to it. So we're now going into the Samarias, to the ends of the earth, to reach the whosoevers in our communities that are all around us. Simon, thank you.
My name's Simon Goddard. I'm a regional minister in the Eastern Baptist Association. And before that, I was a minister at Low Chapel. And when they called me, as their ministry in training, they were desperate. Literally, they were a church that was almost 200 years old, had a number of years of decline, then had experienced some growth, but then were declining again, a congregation of 20 people. And they had a little bit of money left. And with the help of Home Mission, they were able to appoint me as their ministry in training. And they said, we're desperate, we need to do something. And for me, them being desperate was a real opportunity. It was a window of opportunity, these few years that they had as a had me as a ministry in training. They were ready and willing to go on an adventure because they knew without doing something, they were going to decline and die. And we went on an adventure. We, in the church's bicentenary, 2010, we moved out of the building into a school where we'd begun a fresh expression of church. And the church experienced some growth, and from there, I was called into regional ministry. I'm now working on behalf of the Baptist Union in Pioneer Coordinating, and I'm the representative on the Fresh Expressions. Baptists are now part of the Fresh Expressions movement, and I'm their representative. I had a wonderful picture as well, which I'm going to admire. A wonderful landscape, but in front of the landscape, in the foreground, is a lake. And there are some boats even further in the foreground. I feel we're at the edge. We often talk about cliff edges and nosedives in terms of the numbers that we're seeing in our churches. And it's not just the numbers, it's the demographics behind those numbers which indicate that the decline is perhaps going to get even faster very soon. I feel we're at the edge, and we are having to get in the boats and navigate across the lake and find a new land in order for the church to grow and flourish in different times. A couple of years ago in the Eastern Baptist Association, we did some research, looked at the growth of the churches over a 10-year period between 2004 and 2014. A third of the churches had grown by at least 1%. Praise the Lord that in some of our churches there was growth. But looking at the remaining two-thirds of our churches, a third had declined by at least a quarter. A third had declined by at least a quarter over those 10 years, and another third had declined more than that. And sometimes those numbers are there in the background. All of us are in regional ministry and looking at the statistics nationally. It's almost as if we don't want to face the reality of that decline. I think we need to face the reality of that decline and to look at it. Again, on the screen, you would have seen a graph, the life cycle of a church, the life cycle of any living thing. There's a birth, and there's a growth, and there's a maturing, and then there's a declining and a dying. And unless there's some inflection point on that curve to move into a new birth, in a new thing, that death and decay continues. And we need to look for those inflection points in the life of our churches. And I think, not talking about myself, but that church, Low Chapel, willing to appoint someone who was young, wasn't like this. I was young a few years ago, and who was looking at things slightly differently, willing to embrace a new thing. And someone said this morning that in terms of appointing people, churches often appoint someone that they think they want. Someone who's going to look after them in this decline. And, you know, things are challenging, and we need someone to care for us in this challenging time. Actually, sometimes we need to bring someone who's going to shake things up and turn things around. We need those inflection points in the life of our church. We sometimes need to set sail for new shores. I was going to show an advert for Land Rover, not because I like Jaguar Land Rover, but the advert says change in terrain ahead. This new Jaguar Land Rover can observe that the road is changing, that there's water or mud or whatever, and it changes automatically how the car drives. It says terrain settings can automatically adjust to changing road conditions. We need that sort of thing for the church, because the road conditions are changing. The terrain is changing in a number of ways. We're entering a period of post-Christendom. We're post lots of things, but the church is no longer in the place that it used to be. The church is moving, you might say, returning to the margins. We're in a changing paradigm. I would say that the change that we're experiencing is as radical and as significant as when Constantine made the empire Christian. Maybe as big as the Reformation that we're celebrating, just celebrated 500. We are going through a significant change as the church moves from being at the center of our society in the West, moves more and more to the margins. But in moving to the margins, we are returning to the place that the church in the first century found itself. We have a book of Acts and the letters of Paul that help us to understand what it is to be church in the margins. And we need to be thinking about that. We're also, and again, hints of that this morning, engaging in a time where people are following Jesus, are loving Jesus, but are opting out of church. A book called The Churchless Faith, talking about the stories of people who want to follow Jesus, who are passionate about discipleship and aren't finding that in our churches and are opting out and are finding and perhaps forming new forms of church. The structures and the way that we have done church in the past are not connecting with some people, and new forms of church are emerging. You might be of a similar era to me, and mourn the passing of Professor Heinz Wolf from The Great Egg Race. I don't know if you enjoy. I enjoyed watching that. I was young at the time. I enjoyed watching that, where there was a challenge, and these teams had to face this challenge with creativity. They had to make something, invent something that could respond to the challenge. And I think the challenge that we face, this changing terrain, this new opportunity, is bearing the fruit of creativity. We believe in a creator, creative God. And once again, we're responding with creativity to the challenges that we face. In Isaiah, it says, "See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it?" I believe that in the midst of the challenge, when we stop and look and listen to what God is doing, we see signs of hope. We see signs of new things that are springing up and bringing hope. That's the context that we're operating in. I'm going to hand back over to Roy now.
Thanks, Simon. Just to say that being pushed to the margins is no bad thing. Those of you who know anything about me in the Northumbria community know that we draw a lot of inspiration from the Celtic saints. These were the men and women whom God raised up in the 4th, 6th, 7th, 8th century, who were pushed to the margins of Western civilization and birthed a new way of expressing the Christian faith that brought Christianity to Britain. You know, we've celebrated last year Martin Luther and the Reformation, but actually if you want to see the power of God at work bringing transformation, not only to individuals, communities, nations, but to a whole continent of Europe, look to the Celtic saints who came from the margins and transformed society. So being on the margins is no bad thing. And I, if you're exercising your imagination, was also young on one occasion. And not in the context of a church that was in desperate measures, but a church that was a mission hall from a larger Baptist church on Teesside. And they decided that with 18 members, they wanted their own full-time minister and become a proper church. Well, I ruined that idea and effectively embraced the principles of church planting. And they took the risk of actually laying aside the mission hall principles of Sunday evening gospel service, running a Sunday school, and having a midweek prayer and Bible study, which really fed the faithful, but didn't see a single person from the three council housing estates enter any church building or any church activity. So in a pioneering initiative, they took the opportunity to say with a blank sheet of paper, "So how do we share and live out the gospel in this place?" Incarnational, yes. But when Kingsway paperback asked, because we grew phenomenally in the 1980s, we were the fastest growing Baptist church in 1982 to 85, proportionately. Baptized over 80 people in 6 years. Newfound faith, many of them. And when Kingsway came to ask us about, you know, so how do you do this? They wanted all the signs of healthy church. And I said, well, one of the things that we did is we introduced a tea trolley and a video of Jesus of Nazareth, who looked like Robert Powell. And we kind of just had discussions and chats. And bless them, you could just see the editor go, "We don't want this in our paperback. We want all the kind of razzmatazz stuff." And I was saying, no, the secret is actually a tea trolley and giving 10-minute talks after a video clip and allowing people to just hang out. But they had the courage to embrace pioneering. And so both Simon and I, which is why we work so well together, are coming from pioneering and established and fresh expressions backgrounds. Every soul matters to God, right? John 3:16, it's the classic, God so loves the world. Let's just be quiet for a moment, and I want us to pray. And I want you to think about the people who come to your mind now, back in home patches. Not the people in the church, but the neighbors who live aside you. The people who you're aware of, who live in your village or hamlet, your town or city. The people who serve you in the shops, the people who work, the kids that pass by, the young people on the streets. I just want to remind us that God loves every one of them. Every one of them is precious in the sight of God. For to such as these Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. Lord, just give us a glimpse of your heart for the lost, we pray, and move us by your Holy Spirit with the compassion of Jesus, so that we too can look out upon our communities and see the sheep who are without a shepherd, and that in your name we might seek to reach and relate to with the same love and compassion that we see in Jesus, your Son, that flows from the love and compassion that comes from your heart. Amen. I want to talk a little bit about pioneering specifically. Pioneering has got lots of definitions, and for some people it's become a word of opportunity, and for others it's a problem word. It's a very comprehensive word. I'm just going to focus in on a couple of things. For me, pioneering is about breaking new ground. It's actually doing things in new ways. It's about unleashing the creativity and imagination, innovation. One of the things that a church should never be is bland and boring. Because the God who created the heavens and the earth, the God whom we've worshipped, some amazing worship songs, the lyrics fantastic, this indescribable, amazing God, is a God who doesn't want to see a pale reflection of his nature in the church. Our churches should be places where there is creativity and innovation and imagination let loose. And we're going to need those things if we're going to engage with a culture that is changing. Many cultures. So some fresh thinking. When I came to faith in the Cairngorms of Scotland and then returned at that time to North Yorkshire, I went along in the early days of David Watson's ministry at St. Michael of Belfry in York. And one of the things, I don't know how, but I ended up going to a leaders' meeting. I was not a leader. I just kind of turned up, thought there was a different meeting, and through the hospitality of the church was invited to just listen in. And I remember David Watson sharing his vision of actually university missions. And then the story behind the university missions was that David Watson had a vision to reach the nation through men and women who would be the change agents throughout the land. And the way in which you do that is to actually plant good churches in university towns, the length and breadth of Britain, and hold university missions. Through my ministry, which is far and wide now, I get to meet a lot of bishops. A lot of Anglican bishops are missional, and they came to faith through university missions conducted by the David Watson university mission teams. And Anglicans in the main have some very effective, charismatic, evangelical, missional churches in strategic places the length and breadth of our land. It's that kind of pioneering thinking, that's just one element, that's university sector, that we need to be thinking about in relation to pioneering. We need to be thinking about, like with Bible Society a few years ago, that we're praying for Parliament and we pray for those who govern, so why aren't we in there? So Theos was developed with Bible Society, an office in Westminster that becomes a listening board, a reflective theological, reflective practice, and a safe place for politicians who can come, Christians and non-Christians, to seek to discern how to govern this nation. That's pioneering. It's breaking new ground. It's using imagination. It's doing things. It is the pioneering in the, what is it, the au pair culture? All right? And it's also pioneering in the strip club. It's pioneer. We need more pioneers on our housing estates. Not just the suburban, nice housing estates where I live, in a David Wilson home. You can see I'm chuffed after 9 months of living a very difficult life. But some of the urban heartlands, the wastelands of our culture, because God loves those people too. Pioneering is breaking new grounds in all those different contexts. Rowan Williams, as I said, was, I think, a great gift because he gave permission and he formulated and endorsed Mission-Shaped Church, which is a report that actually has changed the face of Anglicanism. Recognizing that, as Rowan Williams said when he was Bishop of Monmouth, that the parish system is dead. It might work in one or two places, but it's not where culture and society is. And it grieves me as a Baptist who teaches in an Anglican college and trains missional leaders that the Anglicans are ahead of the game of us when it comes to missional leadership. I was invited last year to Lambeth Palace to attend the 1,000th ordination of their pioneer minister. We will have 5 ordained next year. Thank God that Simon is now on the Fresh Expressions. We're late to the races. But because we've got in our DNA as Baptists, that missional DNA, we can catch up. We just were slow starting. We didn't hear the start gun, but actually we can get around and make our contribution. Pioneers. My image here is of a stagecoach, right, in the Wild West. And then you've also got a settlement. And I'd like to suggest that actually what we're mostly familiar with is the idea of creating settlements. Church planting. Can you remember Dawn 2000? When I came into ministry, Dawn 2000, we're going to plant 200 churches by the year 2000. 2,000 churches by the year 2000. Peter Brearley tells us, the statistician, that in reality we planted just over 200 that survived more than 5 years. And it's because we're much more familiar with the idea of creating something that's a settlement rather than pioneering. You see, often, and I think this was the strategy that was wrong that I bought into, when I look back now, the church planting strategy was get a building, gather some people, worship God, and then people will come. That's planting a church. Planting the gospel is something a little bit different. It's planting the gospel into a culture and seeing what church emerges. It's a wholly different way of doing things. And that's why there can be no one way of doing church, because a gospel-shaped people will find expression in all kinds of different ways. It's the gospel that informs the church, not the church decreeing what the gospel will be like, look like, and how it will be expressed in this particular situation. I was quite bookish, having been to Bible college and university, and then I went to a housing estate where over 50% of the population were semi-literate or illiterate. I went to a non-book culture. So actually doing church in a bookish way was totally irrelevant, utterly irrelevant. People are storied people, but people are not. We've got huge issues about how we train people in missional leadership, how we train people to pioneer and plant. And our inability to relate to non-book people is a really serious issue. It's a subject in itself. Pioneers are those who are actually breaking new ground, going out into those terrains, taking the risk, planting the gospel, see what emerges. Lee, what you're doing in Whitby. You know, it's like you've got some vision and some strategy, but actually, you know, if my intuition is right and my awareness of you and what I hear on the grapevine is, it's all a bit chaotic and a bit messy. And yet lives are being touched and transformed. And if you went out with a descriptive plan and an objective plan, it's going to look like this, you're destined to fail. But if you go out in the spirit of Christ to share the good news of Jesus and you plant the gospel, it will bear fruit, and you respond to the fruit that God is bringing. Pioneers are those who recognize, go beyond the walls of the church. They create new communities. They're engaged, I'm sure, Simon, you'll share about Fresh Expressions. Pioneer is someone who sees future possibilities and encourages and works to bring them into reality. I work 2 days a week, pioneering, coordinating. half of my time is spent with pioneers who don't fit church. I relate and share and endorse on occasions and affirm those who don't fit. They are the misfits. I mean, Mark was talking about prophetic people, but pioneers, you could put them in the same batch. If you've got a pioneer who's prophetic, they're an utter nightmare. But we need them because they're the change agents. They're the irritants and agitators, and it's knowing how to appropriately support and resource. We must get off the chocks of control that so limits us in pioneering and church planting. We need visionaries. Mark referred to the Ephesians 4. We need to recognize those who have gifts in apostolic ministries, prophetic ministries, the evangelists, the pastors, and the teachers, and release imagination. We're not going to go into the different... pioneer starters, they're people who they just start things. Lots of the pioneers I meet are just... They're just restless. Do you know those people? They're inspirational, but you don't want to be around them too long because you find them exhausting. And they've got like 1,001 ideas just before coffee break. And the danger is just to rubbish them. But actually, in those 1,001 ideas, there may be one or two ideas that have really come from God and not just from their enthusiasm. And we need them. And they're great at starting single. They're absolutely hopeless at developing them. But that's okay. Because there are those who are, pioneer kind of sustainers. They can take the genius. They can take the trigger of imagination that's come from another and actually shape and mold it and form it into a missional community. They can see the gospel planted, and then they can see and develop church and community. Those who can sustain things. And there's where the pastors and teachers come in, the disciples, and those who are able to develop those things. What does a pioneer look like? Well, I've got lots of pictures, but they just look like all sorts, really. Licorice, all sorts. All kinds of people. I'm privileged to be training 7 Baptist pioneers at Cranmer Hall in Durham. They come from all different backgrounds. Funeral directors and youth workers and all the rest. We need the pioneer. My fear about creating a role like a pioneering coordinator is that we think, let's just recognize like a specialist ministry pioneers. We do need to recognize pioneers within our denomination and thank God for Fresh Streams with whom we're partnering in encouraging and developing pioneers. But my heart's passion and desire is to see the whole church embrace the challenge and opportunity of pioneering. So established churches become more pioneering. So emerging churches have pioneering in their DNA from the outset, as well as those who are, just breaking new ground and going out on an adventure. I think our task is in part pioneering to form missional communities, to make that transition from simply being church and gathering people to being missional communities. Mark was right to raise the whole ecclesiology of Baptist church life. We need to revisit again. And in revisiting it, we'll discover in our Baptist history that the apostles, the messengers of old, planted missional communities. They were true nonconformists. They did not work off inherited and established models of church. They renounced the power and control of the hierarchy for the sake of Christ and his gospel to take root in the heartlands and homelands of people. And the development of hubs, I am privileged to be part of a missional kind of huddle and hub with the students at Cranmer. The relational development there, the support network, the accountability, and pioneers go wrong when they have no accountability structures. They usually get slain by the enemy because they haven't got a check on themselves. And they either wear themselves out or they fail with money, sex, or power. Actually, that's not just pioneers. It's kind of everybody. But often pioneers piloting on their own then are in difficulties. If you're an Anglican pioneer, you will not be on your own and you won't be a couple. There'll be a team of 12. Seems a fairly good biblical model. We must stop sending people out in ones and twos and not giving adequate support. Finally, let's think about, just briefly, the places. Think about, I'm into North Allerton. There will be places, Steve, in North Allerton that are thin on the ground, that are unreached. Let's think about the Yorkshire Dales and the North Yorkshire Moors and the villages and hamlets. Let's think about the Teesides and those urban estates. Think about the business community. Think about the schools. Think about the issues that are raised by, you know, referendums and Brexits and divided communities. Think about Derbyshire here, divided communities. There are people here who will not speak to members of their own family going all the way back to the coal strike, the miners' strike. What does it mean to be good news people, pioneering among those different communities and the different people? Let's not be sheep stealers, just putting on attractive things and thinking that good leadership is actually just creating something that's more attractive than the church down the road. Good leadership is about releasing a missional movement and equipping all God's people for the work of ministry, all of us to be empowered to be witnesses. Reaching out to the under 45s, the down and outs and the up and outs. When we were at Bible College, we wondered about going to work with Regions Beyond Missionary Union, RBMU. You know, you have missionary meetings every Friday night at Bible College, and you got called to a different place every Friday night. You know, one week it was India, and the next week it was South America, and next week it was Hartlepool. Well, we let that one pass. And, you know, we're called to the regions beyond now, to the Hartlepools, to the villages and hamlets, to the places where there is no Christian witness. Otherwise, we simply embrace a model that actually is now becoming more redundant, the supermarket model of 20 years ago. Isn't it tragic how the church mirrors society, but usually 10, 15 years after? If we're to be a prophetic people, the theme of this conference, we should be ahead of the game, not lagging on behind. You can't see two of the videos. So what we want you to do now, you listen to us, is we want you just to, in twos and threes, maximum four, we just want you to share for a few moments about what are some of the questions and issues that have arisen for you out of something that I've shared there in Pioneering. I'm going to do the same thing with Simon and Fresh Expressions. But just, you've only got a few minutes, just a buzz in your groups. What are the questions and issues that have arisen out of what has been shared thus far? And then we'll have an opportunity for some plenary afterwards. Okay, so you need to buzz. Okay, we can continue the conversations, but what we'd like you to do now is turn back to the front and just share with us, just give us some of the things that you've been thinking about. What are the issues and questions that have emerged? Well, you should have been quicker. Right, okay. It's the centre of the universe. Right, okay. Okay, no. All right, just shout from Thor there. What are some of the key questions and issues that are emerging for people around this conversation about pioneering? Thank you.
Ours was just really very quickly when we started, but it was going on the route of
Yes. Absolutely. The question is around the balance between kind of praying, thinking, planning, and actually doing it. I just think, you know, Jesus is a great example. He actually taught and encouraged and mentored his disciples by doing it. Of course, there were periods when they were walking and not doing the stuff. But I just think we are held often in paralysis and don't get out and do the stuff. And I think it's partly because there's such a such a risk-averse thing in contemporary society. And it cripples us from just getting out there and doing the stuff. And also there's that sense of it needs to be right. And sometimes needing to be right carries with it the elements of control. And we have to renounce control and abandon ourselves. And, you know, some of the pioneering that I've been involved and seen others in, you know, mistakes have been made. But you learn from mistakes. I'd rather make a mistake with a good intention in the power of the Spirit than do nothing. And I think, you know, the disciples made mistakes. And the grace of God is such that I actually think God blesses godly intention. And sometimes we can prevaricate while the lost are lost. Good question. No. Right. Well, Simon is going to address that question very adequately in a few moments. It's a real issue. Why I mentioned before about the need for us to revisit ecclesiology. Ken, I had the privilege of visiting your place when you were taking your son up to Liverpool in September and preaching. And maybe Chichester is an example. You have what's called alternative gatherings. And for me, there's an example of a church that has an established congregation with a missional heart seeking to reach out, but actually reaching different people, different demographic. And what you've done is you've actually created alternative gatherings. And I think we need to move, as a Baptist denomination, to the permission giving that says we can actually be one church, multi-congregations. We can be one church, different expressions. We can be one church that allows for different people groups. So the gospel, you know, as it takes root in that community center or wherever, and as you're relating to different people, it will be a different expression. I'm not saying doing everything in isolation, because I think there's a place of gathering people, but to expect some of the people that I've known who've come to faith through Northumbria Community over many years now, they're really going to struggle, many of them, to come into any established expression of church. It's just not where they're at. It's among the people that Simon related to, the people who are meeting Jesus and are serious about God, who just can't connect with existing forms of church. So I think it's about it. Rowan Williams used the phrase mixed economy, but there's quite a task for pastors and teachers to teach their way through and to pastor and lead people to the idea that actually you can have different congregations and different groups in your one community. Ken, do you want to say anything at this point? I mean, I can answer that, but I'm from your experience. Absolutely. Critical. Yeah. Northumbria community has companion friends literally all over the world. The vast majority of people are never, ever together. But what we do have is a common rule of life, and it's the values. There's no doubt about it, if you venture into alternative gatherings or churches or whatever, it will change the very nature of church for you, also the central being as well. But, you know, the gospel demands it. Yeah, Helen, quickly. And then Simon. I think, you know, so many of our Baptist churches are elderly congregations. That's the reality. The idea that people in their 60s, 70s, 80s are going to reach people under 45 is a nonsense. There are some glorious exceptions, but you reach basically your age group and the age group below you. So an awful lot of churches trying to reach generations that are beyond them is spending a lot of time and energy that actually will bear little fruit. That's why we need to cultivate and nurture younger leaders, but also allow them to find their different way of expressing faith and sharing the gospel that relates to their generation. That's quite a challenge. Quick question then, Simon must come and share. Yes? No.
Because they want your love and your friendship and
your wisdom and experience and faith sharing.
They just want your friendship, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's a right complementary term. Of course, we need to be able to relate together and appreciate one another and be enriched by one another. That's what it means to be the people of God. But in terms of missionally, there's a huge issue there. And I see a lot of churches getting very, like the church in Swanwick, I spoke to somebody yesterday, and you know, they're very, very depressed that, you know, they don't need the creche now and no young families come to church, this, that, and the other. And I just felt they were beating themselves up. And actually what they needed to be doing is relating to the group that are all around them that they can relate to. But be open to the new things that God is doing among us. Yeah, thank you. And yeah, we need more men and women who will be mentors and the wise mothers and fathers in the faith that nurtured me, that are absent now through the activism of the last 20, 30 years. We don't carry a lot of wisdom around in our churches now. We carry a lot of knowledge and experience, but wisdom from those who sought God. Simon, you need to come and share with us. Thank you.
One of the things that we as Baptists have done as part of this pioneering movement has been things like Urban Expression, who have planted churches in areas of urban deprivation over the last 10, 15 years. That's one of the things that we've done well. But one of the things that I think and I'm passionate about is that pioneering spirit that, you know, these people have gone to these areas where there's no churches and they've grown church. But some of those churches have been disconnected from the rest of the family, the rest of the Baptist family. I'm passionate about us starting new things from churches with connection to established churches. And that's where my commitment to Fresh Expressions comes from. Let me read you this definition of a fresh expression. A fresh expression of church is a new form of church for a fast-changing world that serves those outside the existing church, listens to people and enters their culture, makes discipleship a priority, and intentionally forms Christian community. And there's this journey in forming a church, a fresh expression of church, where you listen first. And very much what Roy was saying, you don't go in with a plan, you go and listen to God, listen to the culture, listen to the needs of the people, and you love and you serve and you live out the gospel, what the gospel looks like in that culture. And as you do that, you build community. And as you build community and people get to know you, they will get to know the one that you follow. And discipleship begins. and it's explored in that context. And as discipleship is explored, a Christian community emerges. And then at the end of the cycle is doing it again. Often churches that have got this DNA will plant something new. I'm a trustee of 57 West, a church that's been planted amongst the homeless and people with addictions in Southend. And a new project working with those who have been rescued from slavery, from trafficking, has emerged out of that project because they have this missional heart as part of their DNA. Fresh Expressions, the Mission Shaped Ministry report that came out in a Mission Shaped Church report that came out in 2004 was observing what was already happening, what God was doing, was telling stories of what was springing up across the church in a number of denominations. And yet, 10 years later, 2014, George Lings, who has recently retired, but Church Army researcher, one of the things that's really helped the Anglican Church and the whole Fresh Expressions movement is to be recording and researching what's going on. So rather than just telling stories, being able to give facts. And they did some significant research amongst 10 dioceses, which is a quarter of the diocese in the UK. And they found 477 Fresh Expressions of Church, where 21,000 people had come to faith. That's the equivalent of one medium-sized diocese. Now, the overall statistics for the Church of England are still in decline, but there are these areas of growth within the whole. I have my local bishop in Ipswich and St. Edmundsbury, where I'm based in Suffolk. Mike Harrison was a bishop who was director of mission in Leicester Diocese, and they in the last few years have said, we want as many fresh expressions of church as we've got established expressions of church. When he was there, he started that off, and they're continuing on with that vision. It's great to have him in our area now, but fresh expressions is one area of renewal in the church, and people are coming to faith. So just some of the statistics. A third of the people reached through Fresh Expressions de-churched. So they have been in church and they've gone away, and Fresh Expressions has given them a way to reconnect with church. Half of the people in Fresh Expressions, this is from that research that George Lings did, half of the people were unchurched, people who were connecting with church for the very first time. And it's a challenge for us as Baptists, I think. One of the different denominations have had different challenges as they've sought to engage with Fresh Expressions. Some of the liturgical sacramental traditions have struggled by saying, okay, if it is a church and we want to recognize it as a church, how are you going to do communion? How are you going to do baptism? So there's a course called the Mission Shaped Ministry course, which has prepared more than 3,000 people, lay people, to plant Fresh Expressions of church. One of the modules in that is worship and sacraments, but we need one on constitutions. As Baptists, we struggle when we ask the question, well, are they a member? Are they part of the governance? Has it got a constitution? Our ecclesiology needs to be reimagined, and we need to be asking significant questions. And some of the things that are happening, this multi-congregational approach, I think is very much where if we're going to embrace this movement, we need to be going. So churches, one of the familiar models is having one church, but with, you know, it's growing churches might have a 9 o'clock and an 11:30 and then a 7 o'clock, you know, in the same sanctuary, probably looking slightly similar, but with different people in mind. We're used to that idea of having one church with more than one congregation because they can't all fit in the building at the same time. But we need to be more creative than that. Missional communities, one way of having a multi-congregational approach where perhaps the gathering and the celebration happens together, but mission and discipleship happen in much smaller groups. There are other types where you might have a campus model where you have a significant main congregation, but then you would have other congregations in a new housing estate, down the pub, a messy church, all connected to this one church, so all being planted out of one church. Or you might just have a number of brother and sister congregations that relate to one another, where there isn't one congregation, but where everyone is just part of a community where they are being discipled, where they celebrate, where they engage in mission. There's all sorts of creative responses to this. One of the things that I've been involved in, as well as Fresh Expressions, is I've recently started a learning community for those churches that want to go on or are already on the multi-congregation journey. There is a sense in which there's lots of questions. How are we one church if we are many congregations? How do we do governance in that context? What do we share? What do we devolve? There's lots of questions, but my belief in and answer to a question earlier is, you know, I believe it's organic. We need to take the next step. 57 West is church in Southend. They turned an old barbershop into a cafe opposite a student residence because they wanted to reach young people, students. You know, it's new student residents. Good Wi-Fi, good coffee, we'll reach them. And there's prayer meeting one night. They were praying because the young people weren't coming, but every time they opened it for the nighttime economy, the homeless would come in. And they were like, no, we're having a prayer meeting, praying for the young people to come, and they were knocking, literally knocking on the door. And they, okay, we've taken the first step. This is what God is saying is the next step. And the next step, it's organic. We don't have to have all the answers to all of the questions before we start on the journey. There's no, it's not an adventure. You know, if it's not an adventure if you've got it all planned out. You know, it might be a holiday, but it's not an adventure. You just get, buy a ticket and see what happens when you get there. I think we need to explore multi-congregational models. That might mean a number of existing churches joining together so they can share the running bit of a church, the charity functions, the governance, which releases communities for mission. You know, for small congregations, that some of that is a burden on our smaller congregations. And if only we were more interdependent, could share some of that, then we'd be releasing people for mission. So Fresh Expressions take all sorts of form. So cafe church, church in the pub, skateboard church, church that exists or emerges through social enterprise. Again, in Southend, Southend's a hotbed for pioneering in the East, but there's a charity shop which is raising money for that local community. A lot of the proceeds go back into that local community. But there's community being formed by the volunteers, and the manager is also the pastor of this community there. And that's a model that's being rolled out in other places. The challenge for us as Baptists is not starting a new mission initiative, which is a stepping stone to church, but saying, how do we do church in this context? How do we turn our coffee morning, which is reaching these group of people, and they love coming and they have a sense of community. We don't in the past we've asked the question, how do we get those people into church? The question we should be asking, how do we take church to those? How do we do discipleship there? What did worship look like there? So not stepping stones to church, but taking the church to the communities that we're part of. Last year at the Baptist Assembly, Ben Francis was one of the speakers from Big Life. And I had the privilege last year of visiting what was happening in Calcutta and that part of India. 2003, three people saying, you know, how can we reach this predominantly non-Christian area that we live? 13 years later, 250,000 people come to faith through a church multiplication movement, a disciple-making movement, where church has been kept very simple, meeting someone's home or under a tree, but discipleship has been taken very seriously. You know, you've been a Christian a couple of weeks, now it's your turn to invite people to your house and start discipling them. You're planting a church in your house a couple of weeks into the Christian walk. And we're going to walk with you and support you. I think sometimes we're interested in adding to our churches. I think we need to be changing our focus and multiplying our communities of Christians. Rich Webb has recently been appointed as director for Big Life in UK and Europe. And he's asking the question, and it's a conversation I think we need to be having. What would a church multiplication, a disciple-making movement look like in the UK? Clearly, at this time of year, we can't sit under trees and sit on people's roofs. We have a different culture, but what would it look like to do church in that way? And there's a whole load of materials. And I think discipleship
people often look at things like messy church, and it depends on how you do it, and doing discipleship in Fresh Expressions is a challenge. But I think Fresh Expressions take discipleship, can take discipleship really seriously. This idea of apprenticeship, of modeling, of assisting, of watching, and then leaving. We want to keep things, the control word is really important. Fresh Expressions and pioneering is all about low control but high accountability. Relationship and connection is really important. But we need to give people permission. We need to let them go. We need to experiment. Lots of things are started. Some will take fruit and bear fruit. But we need to experiment anyway. Some aren't going to work. We just need to give people the permission to fail, to try something and fail. I think the future, this landscape that we think about, we look into the future, is going to be messy. It's going to be unpredictable. We do like to keep things tidy. Don't know if you've read the book The Starfish and the Spider. I think our church organizing is going to be less spider, more starfish, much more Airbnb than Travel Lodge or Premier Inn. You know, where you just present a system that enables people to go off and do their own thing but be connected together. We really need to be thinking about the way we organize and do church. I think we need to have a higher and a bigger vision. I started off by talking about decline and that being the context. And in that sort of context, what can predominate in our mind is, how are we going to survive? We need to lift our sights higher than that. We need to, how can we thrive in this changing culture, in this different terrain? How are we going to be people, those that flourish and see growth for the kingdom of God?
Thank you. Just one little thing to, as a word of encouragement to you. I was talking to somebody yesterday who was saying, Pioneer, we're an elderly congregation. What do we do? And I said, what do you really enjoy doing? Well, we enjoy having cups of tea together. So I encouraged them in Jesus' name to have cups of tea together and just invite a few more people. And I think sometimes, you know, we seek to reach out to that which is unattainable, and partly it's about being what we're good at. In my presidency, I went to a church that did all the stuff for a president, because they'd never had anybody like me before, never had a president before, and the service was utterly rubbish. It was horrendous. But the one thing about that church was its amazing hospitality. And so 6 months later, I revisited that church and said, why don't you do what you're good at? Instead of trying to be like a big congregation in the neighboring city, why don't you just do what you're absolutely superb at, hospitality? So now that church runs art exhibitions and opens its buildings and has actually seen more people come through its buildings and hear and encounter Jesus and his story simply by that church doing what it's good at, hospitality, which is more than just serving cups of tea. So let's be people. Right, now, in incredible generosity, I'm going to give you 5 minutes this time to go into your buzz groups and to not do the introductions. We all know where North Allerton is now. It's North Yorkshire. It's